This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
What the labor market looks like headed into the new year, and what Omicron is doing to the tourism industry. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for Kai Rizdal. It's Thursday, December 30th. Good to have you with us. Even if many of us are homesick or quarantining or worried about getting sick or quarantining, the labor market actually looks strong in the waning days of 2021. We learned this morning weekly unemployment claims are still hovering around the lowest level we've seen since 1969. Marketplace's Mariel Seguera looks at what that tells us and whether it will be sustained in the new year, given, well, gestures wildly at the world, everything.
We were talking in our morning meeting today about how economic news is often, by nature, repetitive. And yeah, today's jobless numbers are similar to the ones that came out last week and the week before. But that's good news. Anne Elizabeth Conkle is an economist at the job site Indeed.
I think really the clear picture here is that Omicron hasn't caused massive layoffs, at least not yet.
A couple caveats. Data from the last week of the year can be cloudy. Companies are probably less likely to lay people off during the holidays. Also,
if you were laid off, you may have just said, you know what, I'm going to deal with that in January, especially because there's been so many stories over the last like 21 months of the pandemic about how clogged the unemployment system is.
So states could be reporting an influx of applications by, say, mid-January. Gary Bertlis is a labor economist at the Brookings Institution. He agrees that these are good numbers, but he does think Omicron will factor in going forward. Yes, a lot of people are getting mild symptoms, but that's still disruptive to the workplace.
Think about a restaurant that has 7 or 8 employees, 3 of whom are sick. It could cause some employers to just shut down, at least temporarily.
Because we're still in this place where it's not clear how sick you're going to get if you do get COVID. It depends on who you are, and in part on whether you're vaccinated and got the booster. I'm Mariel Seguera for Marketplace.
New Year's Eve is traditionally a big moneymaker for bars, restaurants, and nightlife venues, with crowds devouring prefix menus and all-you-can-drink specials. Last year, of course, many of those businesses were closed or operating at limited capacity. This year, Omicron and those staffing shortages Mariel mentioned are threatening their hopes for a return to the old cash cow. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab talked to some business owners today about their plans for tomorrow night.
Despite all the worry, Barolo Grill in Denver is fully booked for New Year's Eve. For now, Ryan Fletter is the owner.
Our phones are ringing crazily. People are checking in on email, and we're just sort of managing the chaos.
The Italian restaurant is serving 5 courses complete with lobster and lamb for $150. People are constantly calling to cancel reservations or book ones that have opened up. And there are other stresses. His dairy supplier was out of milk and cream this week. It might snow tomorrow. Still, he's optimistic about the evening.
I think everybody wants to get out of 2021 and into 2022 in sort of some kind of celebratory manner.
Maybe, but the celebration might look a little different. Steve Zagor in New York City canceled his dinner reservation with friends.
And we're actually having a Zoom New Year's.
Zagor is a restaurant consultant and teaches at Columbia Business School. He says New Year's Eve is the industry's last chance to grab some extra revenue. The fourth quarter can make up as much as 40% of the year's business.
October, November, December is money time, and really need that money time in order to be able to sustain during the dark months of January and February.
No money will be made at Elsewhere, a music venue in Brooklyn. Co-owner Dhruv Chopra decided to cancel tomorrow's DJ event.
You start to question things about morality. You start to question things about safety. Well, then you're also potentially taking wages away from people. And if you cover those wages, how is that sustainable as a business model?
His hope for the new year is that the answers to those questions get a little easier. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, with lots of folks already checked out for the year, a down day for the markets. Details when we do the numbers. One of the biggest debates in society right now is over online speech and how much power tech companies should have in determining what content comes down and what stays up, or who gets to use the platforms at all. Some complain Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube are too heavy-handed or biased, while others argue the platforms need to be way more aggressive. Susan Wojcicki is the CEO of YouTube, which is owned by Google, and I recently spoke with her for our program, Marketplace Tech. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Kimberly, for having me here.
I want to talk about content moderation, because many advocates have said that YouTube has been really slow to act in this area. So, for example, you all banned ads on videos denying climate change just in October. Can you talk about the process of making these kinds of decisions, and is it going to be moving faster in the future?
Well, I'd say that we have been working really hard on this for many, many years, and that when we make a decision, we want to make sure that the decision is very thoughtful, that we've consulted with all different parties, and that once we roll it out in a consistent way that's implemented for all of our creators in the same way. And I understand there are people on both sides of the aisle who disagree with us, but the fact that you see both sides arguing with us means that we are really striking a balance. And when we do policies, sometimes we'll consult literally with dozens of different groups to try to understand what are the different perspectives and how can we do that in a very thoughtful way.
Several researchers and some members of Congress have described your strategy that you've described here as a little bit of a whack-a-mole, blocking content that violates standards as you see it, for the most part, rather than organizations or people known for posting harmful information, for example, which is something that Facebook does. Why do you take this particular approach?
So I would say that we are incredibly consistent, and whack-a-mole does not characterize at all our approach. We also have the three-strike system. And we tell all of our creators, too, that we have this system. This is how it works. Basically, if somebody gets three different strikes within a certain period of time, that account will become terminated. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's some types of content that it doesn't take three strikes, right? So if it's violent extremism or child safety, that's content that is immediately removed. And again, we don't want to necessarily focus on the person. We want to focus on what they say.
And you think that's a better strategy to look at the individual content as opposed to the person or the group, say if it's a white supremacist group that's posting about flowers, you know, would that still be fine? Because some of the researchers we've talked to about this say that what that is doing is providing an off-ramp for people to find more extremist content off of your platform.
Well, first of all, we do see that groups, I mean, you talked about white supremacy. Like, white supremacy groups do not post about flowers. They usually post about content that becomes violative, and then that content is removed under our hate policy. And if a channel, you know, if it has a certain threshold or has any of those violations, like, then that channel will be removed because we have a policy against hate. I think it's a dangerous line to start characterizing individuals and start saying, like, this person is not allowed. Everyone is held to the same standards. Whether you're a politician or you're an individual, these are the lines. The lines are posted on the internet, and if you cross them, then there will be consequences.
Content moderation, obviously a challenge. You're working on it. You have a strategy. What is the next big kind of scary thing that you're worried about on YouTube?
I mean, the content moderation has been a huge area for us. I'm always going to tell you that's going to be my top responsibility, and we can never take our eye off the ball. We're always going to be focused on that. But in terms of other things to worry about, regulation, You know, I look across the globe and there are literally hundreds of bills that are in discussion right now that all have a variety of different ways of impacting YouTube. And we want to make sure that our creators are able to continue to publish and do the great work that they do. I'd also say, you know, there's a lot of competition right now. Everyone is talking about video. We see a lot of growth. It's not just US companies. There are global companies that we're competing with. I have many things that could keep me up at night. And I'm also excited about innovation. And that's really why I ultimately came to Google and to YouTube, was the ability to continue to create and use technology to improve our lives. And that's what I'm hopeful I can do more of in the coming years.
Susan Wojcicki is the CEO of YouTube. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
To follow up on that competition she was mentioning, according to a ranking by the web security firm Cloudflare, this year, TikTok.com was the number one most popular website, beating out Google and YouTube. You can hear more of my interview with Susan Wojcicki at our website, marketplace.org. Coming up.
There's a great deal of last-minute changing going on.
Don't you just hate it when that happens? But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 90 points, a quarter percent, to close at 36,398. The NASDAQ gave up 24 points, almost two-tenths percent, to end at 15,741. And the S&P 500 lost 14 points, three-tenths percent, to finish at 4,778. And because I'm obsessed, some numbers on the James Webb Space Telescope. 5 days after launch, the telescope's components are unfolding. Checking in on some of the public companies that contributed to the mission, most of them down with the market today. Lead contractor Northrop Grumman lost a tenth of a percent. The Timken Company, founded in 1899 in my hometown of St. Louis, gave up nearly three-tenths percent. And Mantech International, which assembled the telescope's sunshield, dropped nearly seven-tenths percent. Bucking that trend, BAE Systems picked up a tenth of a percent. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.50%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. Earlier, we were talking about the impact of Omicron on the hospitality industry in New York, and it's a similar story in the UK. Hotels, restaurants, pubs, and bars have seen a big downturn in business, and that's partly because many customers are worried about getting COVID. The government has moved to bail out some of the ailing businesses, but as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from London, that may not be enough.
Damian Wozniak is a restaurateur. His latest pandemic woes began at the end of November when the Prime Minister announced that Omicron had arrived in the UK.
Straight after his announcement, we were bombarded with cancellations. Within 3 weeks, he'd lost more than $80,000 worth of reservations, and any hopes for the all-important day after Christmas, Boxing Day, were dashed.
The week before the Boxing Day, we had zero bookings. Everyone cancelled.
That's been happening across the country, says Kate Nichols of UK Hospitality, a trade body representing restaurants, hotels, pubs and bars. Omicron's been a disaster.
What we've seen over the course of December is between 40 to 60% of revenues eliminated.
In an already battered sector, she says, which always depends on December to make enough money to get through January and February.
These businesses are very fragile, haven't had a chance to build up a buffer of cash reserves that would be essential and what Christmas normally delivers for the industry to get them through the quieter months.
The government answered this industry's cry for help. Finance Chief Rishi Sunak unveiled a $1.3 billion business support package, the bulk of it aimed at the hospitality trade.
These measures will help hundreds of thousands of businesses and the millions of people that they employ.
But his aid boils down to a grant of £6,000 or $8,000 per venue, just enough, says restaurateur Damian Wozniak, to pay his staff's wages for a week.
Obviously, I'm grateful. We're going to get some help, but £6,000 for the medium-sized business is not much.
He's not calling for more government cash, but many other businesses are. And Kate Nichols says if customers continue to stay away or if fresh COVID restrictions are imposed,
we are going to need additional substantive support from government in order to prevent businesses going bust and to save jobs across the economy.
But the government's under intense pressure, both to reduce its debt, which has spiralled during the pandemic, and to cut taxes to stave off a cost-of-living crisis. More help for hospitality may not be at the top of its agenda. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
With the end of the year also comes the beginning of the month, and rent is due. With many still struggling to catch up on rent payments they missed during pandemic job losses, the federal government is working on an effort to reallocate rent relief money, taking it from communities that haven't spent theirs and redistributing it to others that still have need. In its guidance on the plan, the U.S. Treasury Department says it will decide where to spend, giving priority, when possible, to requests to keep funds within the same state where the funds were initially allocated. But as Houston Public Media's Jen Rice tells us, one Texas county is returning millions of dollars, even though residents there are still being evicted.
Ebenisha Wiley has been on the brink of eviction for months. She lives in a county just outside Houston where officials decided to return much of their federal rental assistance money.
I need it. I need it. Like, I am desperately in need for help.
In late November, officials in Montgomery County voted to return $7 million, almost one-third of the money that was meant to help renters struggling to make ends meet during the pandemic. The county had spent less than 2% of it, according to federal data. The day after commissioners voted to return the money, Wiley stood outside the Montgomery County courtroom where a judge ruled she could be evicted.
I don't have any parents, grandparents, any immediate family I can turn to. It's just me and my kids. It's a struggle that wouldn't nobody understand unless they were in my shoes.
A spokesperson for Montgomery County's chief executive said in written comments that a county program used more than $6 million in CARES Act funds in 2020 to distribute emergency rental, utility, and mortgage assistance to more than 1,700 homes, and that residents had been applying to the state rent relief program, so there wasn't much need for the county program. Wiley wasn't the only one facing eviction that day. On the docket, there were five other cases involving renters who said they had applied for state rent relief and had not yet received it. Wiley's a single mom with five kids. She says she looked for a Montgomery County rent relief program but couldn't find one. She applied for statewide relief months ago but hasn't been approved.
I spoke with them and they said, take 60 to 90 days. So I'm like, wow, by that time I'll be put out.
It's not surprising Wiley couldn't find a way to apply for county funding, says Jay Malone, political director of the Texas Gulf Coast Area Labor Federation. For over a year, he's partnered with nonprofits and local government officials to host rent relief sign-up events throughout the Houston region, where people facing eviction can get help.
We didn't reach out to Montgomery County because there was no evidence that there was an active program. There was no platform to apply. And so our understanding was that there wasn't a program that was active.
Montgomery County officials say they still have $10 million in emergency rental assistance, and they're planning to distribute it through 2022. An online portal launched in November has received over 500 applications. Meanwhile, the statewide rent relief program has closed to new applicants after running out of money. It distributed about $25 million to people in Montgomery County. Diane Yantel, president of the National Low Income Housing Coalition, says it's likely that the U.S. government will get back a significant amount of money to redistribute for rent relief.
There's probably about up to $1 billion at stake that may be reallocated to other communities.
Yantel says federal officials are having conversations with underperforming state and local rent relief programs, encouraging them to give up those funds voluntarily. But she says some areas are refusing money for what appears to be ideological reasons.
We are seeing some states and localities suggest or outright refuse to accept those additional funds, saying that there is no remaining need when there clearly is.
In Texas, some counties have spent most of the federal rental relief funds they've received. In Harris County, which includes the city of Houston, there's a joint program to distribute the rent money. It has handed out over $250 million, and the program is now out of money. The program has requested another $250 million from the Treasury Department. Ebenisha Wiley hasn't received rent relief money yet, but she's managed to stave off eviction temporarily by appealing an eviction judgment. A hearing on her case is set for February. In Houston, I'm Jen Rice for Marketplace.
Many countries, including the U.S., put travel bans on southern African countries in late November, including Botswana, where the Omicron variant was first detected. And that caused lots of uncertainty for the tourism industry there. But now that some countries are lifting those restrictions, perhaps the industry can get back on its feet. Which brings me to this next installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is John Gibson. I'm the Reservations and Marketing Director of Chobe Holdings, which is a company listed on the Botswana Stock Exchange that is engaged in the wildlife tourism industry. Chobe Holdings has a broad portfolio of properties in the safari industry. So we have camps and lodges in northern Botswana and also auxiliary services such as an air charter business and an air maintenance business as well. The travel bans had an immediate impact. People had to try and get back to Europe, to the United Kingdom, and it was very difficult for them because there were a limited number of flights. There was a great deal of last-minute changing going on and new routes being found.
So I think in many ways we were quite lucky because it was coming out of the original restrictions. So business hadn't returned to normal levels. So there weren't as many guests in country as there might have been. If this had happened in the peak of the high season, it would have been very, very difficult. It's not like you are organizing a trip to a European, Southern European travel destination where it is possible to, for example, put on more flights. It is very, very limited, the capacity into these remote areas. Occupancies are lower than normal, but there's significant increases in occupancies as we move through the years. So in the new year, as we look at April, May, June, July, bookings are actually looking strong, which is very, very positive for the recovery of the sector, which employs so many people in northern Botswana. I think that we will see tourism continue to develop and really contribute to the protection of the last wild spaces on Earth. And it's important that tourism develops in the right way. It needs to be, it needs to contribute not only to people, but also to wildlife. And in that way, protects wildlife and protects these vast spaces.
That was John Gibson from Chobe Holdings. Thanks to our friends over at the BBC for that story. But really, we can't do this series without you. So please go to marketplace.org/myeconomy and let us know what's going on in your economy. This final note on the way out today. Earlier, we were talking about how this latest COVID surge is hitting the tourism and hospitality industry at home and abroad. Well, in line with that, another bit of bad news for the cruise industry. Today, the Centers for Disease Control warned people to avoid cruises, regardless of your vaccination status. The agency says it has more than 90 cruise ships under investigation or observation due to COVID outbreaks. So if you're planning to ring in the new year on the high seas, mask up. Okay, we gotta go. But first, here's one more moment of economic context on the James Webb Space Telescope. At least 306 different companies, government agencies, universities, and other institutions had a hand in building and testing the telescope, according to NASA, with thousands of people across those organizations all watching every stage of the mission and trying not to let the anxiety get the better of them. Amir Babawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr and Diantha Parker are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kimberly Adams. We'll see you tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.